Okay, hello. I'm Roger McDonald, Deputy Director of Arts Initiative Tokyo, AIT. And we're a non-profit curatorial collective which was begun in Tokyo, Japan in 2001. So we've been going for 7 years or so now. And I suppose in some ways this is quite unique, I suppose, to have a non-profit and alternative space surviving for so long in a place which doesn't have official state or city funding. Many people consider this to be quite remarkable, but for us from the beginning, I think we realized the situation of Japan and the funding situation. So what we've always tried to do from the beginning is to think about business just as much as our other activities. So just to give you a very brief rundown of some of the main things we have done, I suppose firstly we run an independent art school. This is called MAD, which starts for Making Art Different. And in 2008 we offer 5 different courses, from 1 year curatorial courses to the shortest kind of 3 month courses, which for instance people gather to read English language art magazines, or courses offered for artists to improve their presentation or like art history skills. And yearly we get about 150 people attending. And the interesting thing, I think, in relation to art education generally, is that most of our students are not students. They're working people. We have people in their 60s attending some of our classes, housewives. Most people are working, and interesting enough, most women, which is also quite interesting in Japan, I think, says something about the social situation, perhaps. So, you know, this MAD school for us is actually also the main generator of income, brings in probably about 60% of our entire running costs in a year. We are a staff of 4 permanent staff in the office. So basically, you know, with no regular state or city funding, we're having to bring in, generate all our own kind of capital and economy. So from this, we pay ourselves salaries and rental of this space, etc., etc. I suppose the other main initiative we have done is an artist in residence program as well in Tokyo. Very surprising to us, in 2001 when we started, Tokyo didn't have any kind of residency, which seemed very bizarre considering it was such a huge global kind of city. And maybe that's the reason it just didn't bother to kind of go into this area. But, you know, we heard from many, many artists on our travels that there was a real desire for people to come and spend time in this city. So we started as a very small private initiative, renting apartments. And now we have partnerships with various arts organizations like IASPIS in Sweden or FRAME in Finland, Asia Link in Australia. And I suppose now we invite, host about 5 to 6 artists and also some curators every year. We're not open to application, and we do try and work through these kind of partnerships, purely because we don't have this kind of capital income to be able to invite who we wish. So that's, I guess, those are the two main activities we concentrate on. In addition, you know, because we're a bunch of curators and organizers, we do try and initiate projects every year of some description. It could be some sort of symposium, it could be a more experimental type of exhibition program. And obviously throughout the year we're continuously putting on sort of talks and slideshows and little lounge nights, little musical performances. So I suppose we're essentially very, very kind of flexible in our approach to working, and I suppose always looking for the gaps which the larger institutions are maybe failing to kind of fill. So hopefully, you know, we still have a kind of significance and meaning in the art world in Japan. Hopefully we've kind of contributed some kind of impetus and incentive to the situation. And I suppose now in our 7th year, we have, in a sense, become quite institutional ourselves. I think this is an issue we're always thinking about amongst the staff. This kind of balance between, you know, becoming an organization with enough kind of economic funding base and a kind of also a recognition within the art scene in Japan. But on the other hand, you know, how to keep ourselves light-footed, or how to keep ourselves always kind of, I suppose, with an element of risk, you can say, you know, to be able to do things which maybe other places find difficult to do. So that's something I guess we're thinking about more and more as we get older. What are we going to do, you know, in our 10th year? Should we, you know, fragment into sort of micro activities, or should we consolidate ourselves and become bigger and heavier and more rooted? These are questions which, you know, amongst the founding members we're thinking about now, actually. I suppose the other aspect which is interesting for us is to maintain this kind of international aspect. I think AIT, and partly because someone like myself is part of the members, part of the staff. I think from the beginning we've had quite an international outlook, hopefully. All of the founding members have some experience studying outside of Japan, so, you know, we like to think we're kind of bilingual. And this is some area which I think in Japan, until recently, has been rather slow to catch on. I think recently there are these kinds of much more international outlooked museums and institutions and media coming along. But hopefully, you know, through this, we've managed to make links with similar organizations, you know, across the water in Korea or in the Asia-Pacific region. And I suppose using our expertise or know-how in terms of running an educational program, this is interesting for us. We've in the past worked with universities or learning institutions. And, you know, I guess that, in a sense, has molded a very unique place where we work, I think, which I suppose you can say is actually not primarily about exhibition. It's not primarily about this kind of idea of display. It seems to be perhaps more about kind of discursive spaces, or about creating opportunities for like-minded people to come together and talk, basically, or listen and ask questions and discuss things. So we feel that that's actually something very important in terms of developing audiences, you know, intelligent audiences for contemporary art in Japan. And I think that kind of aspect is really very much needed, I think, for an art scene, for an art world, to actually develop a real kind of healthy layering of criticality, of appreciation. So I like to think that, you know, over the 7 years we've been running this school, there may be 600 or 700 people now who've taken all our various courses, and many have gone on to work professionally in the gallery world, in some in the museums. And of course, you know, probably the majority, hopefully they might have picked some seed up while they were here, and that's helped them in their kind of life, or in their kind of appreciation of art. So I think maybe, you know, in a sense that reflects the realities of operating in a city like Tokyo, which has extremely pricey real estate, as you probably know. And so it's difficult to keep a kind of empty white cube space permanently. So I think, you know, hopefully we're kind of working within a kind of interesting balance between, you know, using a space as a classroom, as a kind of gathering space, but also, you know, we do hold little exhibitions and more experimental type of presentations in our space. And of course the other thing is, if we need bigger space, we will usually go out and collaborate with someone who has the bigger space. It could be a club. In the past it's been empty gymnasiums of schools, it's been sometimes more art oriented spaces. So I think hopefully, you know, it would be great if we have managed to find a kind of a methodology or a model for operating in a city like Tokyo with its difficulties. You know, I think there are difficulties in terms of funding, in terms of costs, economics and things. Hopefully we've managed to maybe explore a model which is sustainable and which actually contributes something at a different layer to what's happening in the scene. So as I said before, I think we're now at a stage in our growth, in our evolution, where, you know, we don't know what the future holds in a sense. I suppose we have various visions. Each one of us personally are also kind of, I suppose, growing as curators, as individuals. So, and you know, people are having babies and families are coming. So as with these things, you know, I think it will take its kind of natural organic path, and who knows what the future holds. But what I would like to see is certainly a younger generation, you know, the artists and younger curators in their 20s, to be inspired, and maybe, you know, they will actively start things which, you know, hopefully we might have kind of pushed a bit. So that for me would be something very important, to kind of pass on this knowledge, or sort of actually, you know, have a sense of like the future through the past and through the present. So I think that's very important for us, I suppose.
Can we just go back a little bit? Could you tell me a little bit about the background of the art scene in Tokyo at the moment you were considering to make AIT? And what was the big reason behind?
Yeah, well, we actually came together in 2001, which was, I think, an important year for art in terms of the fact that it was the year of the Yokohama Triennale, the first Yokohama Triennale. And, you know, I worked on this as an assistant curator, and Yoko Miyahara, she was also working in it. Yuko was involved. So a number of us who started AIT were involved in some way. And I think Yokohama actually was quite an interesting wake-up call for us, in terms of it being really the first large-scale international exhibition that ever happened in Japan, I think. You know, there was a Tokyo Biennale in the early 70s, but, you know, it stopped after one time. So Yokohama really, in many ways, brought this kind of globalization of the contemporary art world to Japan in a big way. And I think what it really managed to do was to coalesce a new audience. You know, it kind of brought together so many young people and not so young people who actually were really interested in contemporary art. And as someone who was working in it, for instance, when we made the call for volunteers for maybe 300 spaces, there was like nearly 1,000 kind of applications, you know. And I suppose just that experience was one kind of incentive for us to really think about, you know, hey, you know, maybe what the museums have been doing, what the commercial scene has been doing, is actually missing out a whole chunk of like interest in contemporary art, which is maybe something much more kind of ephemeral, much more across many, many different communities and types of people. And is there some way maybe of, you know, tapping into this kind of great energy, which we thought was very interesting? And, you know, forming a school seemed to be one way of kind of approaching this. Of course, you know, we also did a lot of field work about the current situation of Japanese art schools, for instance. And, you know, I teach at a couple of art schools too, and I think there are many aspects of the system, of the curriculum, which we were very critical of. We still are quite critical of. For instance, a real lack of presentation or knowledge of the history of recent art, for instance. I think many, many young art students spent 4 years in art school, and most of them come out without knowing much about like what the history of art is from 1945 to the present. So, for instance, there seem to be these gaps which we identified also, and that was another reason we really wanted to kind of challenge this idea of learning, of education. And also, I suppose, you know, from the beginning, we felt, you know, Tokyo lacked certain things, like a residency, like a proper kind of alternative space which could have links with the international world, but also be based very much in Japan. So, you know, I suppose that's some of the kind of basic reasons we came together. I think, you know, it was there was, I suppose, no grand plan or anything. You know, we just spent many, many hours drinking beers together in bars and things, as most of these things seem to happen. And we said, okay, let's take the form of a non-profit as well, because that was the period when the non-profit law in Japan came into effect, and it was it seemed to us that we should have this public dimension. We could have become a limited company, for instance. We could have taken other forms of framework, but I think we were very interested from the beginning in actually doing something at a public kind of level, having an accountability to students, to members and things. So, I guess that's the kind of seeds of the organization.
At that moment, were there other independent spaces? And when you said you did a little bit of research, did you really try to model something which could be unique to Tokyo, or have you borrowed others? Some models from the West, wherever.
Yeah, I think, there are, of course, artist spaces, for instance, in Tokyo. Komanden, which is now called Kandada, is one example. They've been going longer than us since the mid-90s. But it occurred to us that actually most of these spaces tend to be artist initiatives. Many are on the suburbs of the city, just purely, again, because of the cost involved. So, ART was also quite unique still in that it's actually not an artist-run initiative. It's actually put together by a whole six curators and arts organizers. So that seemed to be quite unique. In terms of like borrowing models, I suppose, many of us had spent time abroad. I studied in London. I suppose we had various, kind of not direct models, but of course we all knew about the curatorial programs at Royal College of Art or Goldsmiths or, the Whitney Independent Study Program. These kinds of things were obviously, we were very familiar with, and they were kind of interesting inspirations, I think, for us. In many ways, I think we were doing something quite new. I think, we were just going into an area which I think, certainly in Japan anyway, was seemed to be non-existent at the time. In the beginning we were quite nervous about, how this would survive. Would be able to make some kind of sustainable system out of this? Would be able to, basically get a salary from what we're trying to do? I guess that there were kind of hesitations, but also, we felt that it was something really necessary, so we kind of did it.
And you are the founder, and you also mentioned a few others. Who were the founders exactly, and what was the special situation in the beginning, and are they all remained, or are there some change?
Yeah, there's six original founding members. The director is Yuko Ozawa, who has just become a mum, so she's not coming every day, but Yuko used to work in the office of Fumio Nanjo, who is now the director of the Mori Museum. Mr. Nanjo he still does, he runs like an independent curatorial office. Yuko and also Miyahara Yoko, the two of them were working in Nanjo's office. Ozawa Keisuke is another member. He was at the time running a small gallery. He'd just come back from studying art in London too. Sumitomo Fumihiko, who's currently curator at the Museum of Contemporary Art, another member, and also Yasufumi Nakamori, who's currently, I think, an assistant curator in a museum in Houston, in the US, and myself. So there's six of us. And I think, we're all roughly the same age, mid to late 30s. We'd all, around 2000, 2001, somehow ended up in Tokyo after various periods of study outside or working in the art world in some way. And I suppose, it was a kind of coming together of minds just at the right time. It was a kind of synergy, synchronicity at that time, and just talking over beers and things, I suppose, saying, let's try and do something, new, let's try and do something interesting. So, you know, in the beginning, I think Nanjo-san, Fumio, was really helpful in actually supporting our research. For the first 2 years of our existence, we actually squatted his office's meeting room. We actually started our classes there, and, you know, we kind of had a little desk corner where we just used to run the office. And from about 2003, 2004, we moved into our present location and became more independent financially and things. So in terms of a structure, we have the six founding members. We're still all involved, but as you can hear, some of them are working full-time in other positions. But, you know, the six core members are always there. And we try and make maybe two meetings a year where the six of us come together and we discuss, you know, the visions of the future, the directions we're going in. So that's always the core base, I think. Of course, we have other staff, you know, Akiko and Naoko have joined. And then we're actually now in the process of renewing our advisory system. We have a two-tier system from this year. One is a kind of Friends of AIT, which is composed more of senior curators, international curators and critics from around the world, about 15 of them. And then another tier, which is composed of four committees, which are the idea being, you know, to make a more active committee, which is younger curators, younger academics, artists who can actually really, you know, we can go to and we actually discuss about the contents of the school, about our curatorial direction, updated information about books, etc. So, you know, I suppose it's similar to many other organizations. So it's very much based on this kind of loose kind of network of people who we rely on.
And as quite always, and, you know, independent organization or artist-run spaces always came in a situation which is quite alternative to the big institution. And when you guys started it, and how did you position your organization? And especially now, some of your founding members actually worked in the institution. And do you think there's hierarchy between, and what's the relationship?
Right. Yeah, I mean, we're often asked this, and I think, you know, I always say, I don't think we had, or still, we don't have any kind of oppositional attitude towards the museum or the institution. I think from the beginning, we felt that what we could do is something actually parallel to the institution. We actually work with institutions if we think that there's an interesting possibility, a project. We've done workshop projects with the Museum of Contemporary Art and, you know, other museums in Japan. You know, I think in Japan there is a very unique history of this kind of institutional critique, which is probably very, very different to what happened in Europe or the States in the 70s and 80s. You know, obviously the whole history of art museums is much younger. It's only in the sort of early to mid-50s that the first art museum opens in Japan. So I think, you know, artists have had a very different relationship to institutions historically. So maybe, you know, some of this is reflecting in this attitude. We like to, I suppose, have a more of a kind of positive kind of relationship with institutions, not purely kind of like a critical kind of oppositional kind of position. And hopefully, you know, by taking such an approach, it could be more productive. And I think that's more interesting when, you know, two or more different aspects come together and maybe, you know, something completely different can emerge. So I think we're always interested in, like, you know, what could be like an interesting or a new or a novel outcome of a situation. So, yeah, I think, you know, a number of our staff are working in museums, and, you know, we very much use this to our advantage, you know, and they're very interested in that, and also kind of helping AIT in any way they can. So, you know, we often kind of reference this book by Michel Deserto, you know, which is often put out by Alternative Spaces, you know, and his whole idea of, like, the strategic level and the tactical level. And, you know, I think in many ways this kind of model holds up quite interestingly. And as he says, you know, I think the tactical level works best when, you know, it's actually much more kind of subtly interwoven with the strategic level. And I think in a sense, you know, a space such as us, we have an obligation to not only be interventionist and be on the edges. I think real meaning also emerges when we actually step forward into a more strategic dialogue with the people maybe who have more power in that sense, you know. So I think we're always very interested to see how we can actually remain independent or have this kind of spirit of risk and experimentation, even when we're working with museums or with universities. And for us, you know, it seems to make a lot of sense, you know.
And it seems that you have pretty stable financial resources. But you also said that you would like to explore, you know, the resources too. And for what reason you want to explore that if you have already quite stable?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we have an economic base which is now, what, giving the salary of at least 4 or 5 members per month, and this space rent. And this is all coming from our own initiatives, basically, the school. And the residency, management fees, etc. you know, I think, like, you know, we were talking about China and how, you know, there are very new models seem to be emerging now, particularly in the Asian situation. And I think, you know, maybe from a traditional kind of European or American perspective, maybe this would be really criticized. You know, you can't go into the commercial area or, you know, work with businesses. I don't know, this seems maybe a slightly kind of a dated kind of position to take. I think, you know, I think the things change all the time, and I think for us it's more about maintaining some kind of vision, or maintaining some kind of like strong mental kind of vision, and I think as long as that can be translated into what you want to translate it into, whether it's a project, a book, some kind of symposium, you know, I think interesting and very fruitful relationships can come about from working with big corporations, or you know, maybe running more of a kind of commercially driven aspect. And you know, I think we can't lose sight of the fact that the end point is always, you know, to realize things which we are interested to realize. So as long as that can be rigorously maintained, and as long as we don't forget that, I think, you know, we're all open to kind of entertain ideas, new ideas about funding. I think why not? You know, it's like it seems to me quite silly to kind of shut out like whole aspects of like the world or like, of economics on some kind of strange ideological principle, you know. I think, you know, as long as we maintain our kind of our visions, you know, and hopefully this is coming across in what I say, you know, having some kind of public dimension to what we do. Having an aspect of like discursive criticality in what we do, and you know, the projects we've hopefully done over the years are really illustrating or hopefully echoing, reflecting our values, what we think is important, you know. So yeah, I think you know, who knows what the future of the funding situation is, you know.
But has it been difficult, especially in the situation of Japan? If you want to explore that, what would be the major difficulties?
Well, you know, I think we have a non-profit status. This gives us certain guidelines legally. For instance, we cannot buy land, we cannot invest any of our money into stocks and things. But, you know, these are basically things which we probably don't want to do anyway. So in terms of making a reasonable profit, and I guess the reasonable profit is like a key term maybe, you know, this would be fine within the legal situation of being a non-profit in Japan. So I don't think there is essentially any big legal or even ethical barrier, I think, you know, in Japan to exploring new avenues. and actually, I think, you know, maybe as one of the kind of more, dare say, kind of mature kind of non-profit organizations in Japan, you know, I think being 7 years old is actually quite old now in Japan, you know. So, you know, we feel, you know, maybe we do have a kind of obligation, a responsibility to the art community, to the non-profit community also, to kind of explore, you know, what the future could be for non-profits in Japan. So I think that's interesting.
Has the recent booming in the market of contemporary Asian art, has it provided to any opportunities?
Short answer would be no. But yes, in the sense that, you know, I think just having that kind of bubble situation happening around us, it's obviously affected the way artists are working, the kinds of ideas which we're thinking about in our school and things. So, of course, you know, I think it's provided a very rich, very interesting kind of set of agendas to think about. But in terms of like any direct financial benefits, I would say almost none. You know, I mean, in terms of we're not representing artists, we don't sell work directly. So, in terms of like any direct, you know, quick making a quick buck, you know, like I wouldn't say we've managed to kind of go into this. And I don't know, maybe that's maybe we're silly. We should be into it more. But like, yeah. Not at the moment.
But somehow this aspect, has it somehow, you know, signed certain influence in to the artists here in Japan? And or in the last 7 years, have you observed any change about the practice of the artists, as you a little bit mentioned? And how did you cope with the change?
For artists, you mean?
And also your practice here.
Yeah, well, I mean, I must say, a lot of the artists we tend to work with, just maybe they happen to be unrepresented by galleries. You know, this is maybe, you know, it's kind of like this kind of unintentional agenda which we have. But, you know, it seems to us that one of the things something like AIT can do is to actually work with artists who basically work in media or in project-based works, which the market finds more difficult to deal with, you know. So an artist like Mori Hiroharu, who was in Venice last year, you know, he's basically more of a project-based artist. He's making kind of very interesting kind of socially critical works, quite rare, I think, in Japan, to be honest. So, you know, for instance, we worked with him a number of times. And that for us is actually important. It's kind of interesting to work with those kinds of artists. And, you know, it seems to us that, of course, we've worked with painters and others before, but when the market seems to be this kind of vibrant, maybe there's actually an incentive to actually look at those parts of this of the art scene which maybe naturally become marginalized, you know, when capital becomes like the main kind of value indicator of the scene. I think it's really important to always search for, you know, what is kind of swept aside, or what is kind of dropped off the edge in a sense, and the kinds of, you know, not only artists and artworks, but the kinds of ideas, I think, you know, also I think ideas are kind of naturally seem to be kind of categorized. I mean, I feel anyway, during these kind of moments when the market is very vibrant. For instance, journalism is one area in Japan which I think has been really affected by the market, maybe in a good way, in that, you know, so many more magazines, popular magazines, are writing about contemporary art. But I think there is a negative side, which is that, you know, it's invariably a very, very kind of like cursory, very kind of thinly kind of researched kind of level that is being discussed. So, you know, hopefully you know, it now is also a time to think about other issues. You know, for instance, we're very interested in talking about the idea of the public in Japan. You know, is there a notion of the public which can actually have any kind of sense of like depth and meaning? And how does, you know, contemporary art practice operate within that in Japan? I think that's a very interesting situation, which, for instance, you know, maybe the whole market kind of situation has quite marginalized, you know, it seems to me. But, you know, I think it's an interesting time. Things like architecture seem to be, like, very much also discussed, I think, in Japan these days. And I think this has interesting implications also for contemporary art and artists. The whole notion of time is very interesting for me. I mean, we have good discussions amongst ourselves of, you know, I think one of the biggest challenges facing, I think, art institutions, not only in Asia but probably around the world, in the last 5 or 6 years and going into the future, is how to develop relationships with time. You know, it seems to me that the traditional kind of idea of a museum is essentially based on very, very kind of classical 19th century Newtonian notions of like space time, basically as a box where you bring finished objects and show them. And of course, this is changing rapidly with the whole debate about new institutionalism in Europe, for instance, Palais de Tokyo and Kunstverein Munich. And I think Europe has kind of begun a very interesting discussion, which I hope, you know, I really wish that, you know, there has to be a kind of similar kind of reflective discussion maybe in Asia, in the Asia-Pacific region. And, you know, I think the projects, the space is taking part in the Cologne presentation, for instance. You know, I think each one has a very interesting kind of model maybe to contribute to this debate. What are the kind of differences? What are the kind of interesting kind of specificities about, you know, spaces in Asia as compared to like Northern Europe, for instance? And I'm sure there will be historical differences, social differences, economic differences. So for me, you know, time, for instance, seems to be one really interesting area in terms of time-based work, in terms of performative work, in terms of video and new media, internet-based work, in terms of, you know, the possibilities of that an exhibition can contain. You know, can an exhibition actually contain kind of multiple kind of understandings of time, or time as something cyclical or spiral, rather than just like has an opening and has an end? You know, like all these issues for me, I mean, as someone who likes to think about this kind of stuff, are raising really interesting big challenges, I think, for the future of art spaces and institutions. So I really hope that, you know, all these new spaces and museums that are opening in Japan, in China, you know, in Singapore, in Thailand, I'd like to think that, you know, the directors and curators who are involved in this, and the artists, you know, really kind of think deeply about, like, not only, you know, immediate issues, but how art actually is situated in this moment of the historical process. You know, I think it's like, I mean, recently I'm just personally thinking a lot about like contemporary art within a much longer time span of the historical process. I mean, I'm talking about like, you know, hundreds of thousands of years. Like, it's, when you think about it, it's kind of an amazing kind of notion that, you know, we're here in 2008, and in terms of like evolution of like, you know, time, it's like an amazing compression of like things have happened only in the last 50 years, you know. And it's like, where's it all going? What's happening? So, you know, I think institutions have to also think about these kind of larger problems. I mean, for me, it's a very exciting time, you know. So I think, yeah.
Are there some areas that you think AIT could do but hasn't done yet? For certain reason.
Yeah, I mean, one thing is maybe we've been discussing recently is something, you know, like the model that Archangel in London, I don't know if you know this space called Archangel, where it's basically a commissioning body. And we're, it, you know, dawned on us recently that with the market being very kind of active, maybe there's a part of it which is making some artists at least quite uncomfortable. You know, I think many artists are very comfortable with this situation, but maybe some artists find that, you know, they begin to be stuck inside like a very repeating record or something, you know, and they have to just like produce for the market. And you know, there's a number of artists that, you know, we've spoken to who seem to be saying this. And you know, would there be a space for a commissioning organization? Maybe it's something like AIT that comes along, works with commercial galleries, with institutions, to realize projects which are maybe harder for the market to realize and deal with, you know. It's what Archangel have been doing in London, I think, very interestingly, using public money, but, you know, maybe different financial models have to be thought of in Japan. But, for instance, you know, this idea of working with an artist to realize some kind of more experimental project, something more site-specific maybe, or, you know, time-specific, that kind of thing appeals to us, I think, you know. It could be something for the future to think about, yeah.
And 7 years has passed, you said, have you felt any itchy?
Yeah, definitely. You know, you know, we're all growing individually. You know, like I said, personally, with families and kids, that changes things, you know, obviously. I mean, and also as an institution, I suppose, you know, to even use the word institution when I refer to AIT, this is a real change. You know, in the beginning we were just like young and like full of like a sense of like, you know, we're just gonna like do what we do, and hopefully, you know, we haven't lost that. But at the same time, you know, I think we have to face the fact that we've become a kind of recognized institution in the situation of Tokyo, maybe even within Asia. You know, to be invited to the Cologne thing is kind of interesting for us, you know. We've reached maybe a certain level of maturity or something. I don't think, I don't know if, yeah, to describe it as an itch, it's quite interesting there. Is it an itch? Do we want to scratch it, or do we want to just leave it like and try and like, you know, in Japanese we say gaman, which is like just to kind of like, even though it's itchy, we don't want to scratch it sort of thing. You know, I don't know. So it's an interesting metaphor to think about, I think. You know. Yeah, like I say, I think, you know, there are plenty of things, I think, that still can be done in Japan, which have yet to be done. I think publishing is another whole area which we're thinking about seriously. So, you know, hopefully there are enough kind of things to keep us kind of like busy and to keep us interested. But, and I think, you know, it's good that we become actually, in a sense, more institutionalized. I mean, that brings with it a lot of like responsibility, a greater sense of a public kind of accountability, which is really good, I think, important for alternative spaces. And it means that, you know, we have to really ask ourselves each year or each month, you know, what does an alternative mean? You know, does it have any, does it even have any significance these days? You know, like, and I'm actually, you know, quite interested to talk more about alternative times rather than alternative spaces. I mean, this is something I've been thinking about for the last 2 or 3 years, and you know, I think to talk about alternative spaces these days seems to be quite limiting, because I think museums can also initiate moments when they're extremely alternative, or, you know, if you define alternative in a much more kind of fluid way, as a time-based thing, you know, I think then it becomes very interesting. You know, it's not just confined to like identities of space. So for me, that's kind of maybe something which, you know, all spaces or museums or institutions can think about. You know, they can have moments when maybe they become very habitual, they become very kind of institutionalized, but then maybe hopefully there are moments to counter that when they can become actually maybe more experimental, more fluid. And you know, that kind of model seems quite interesting, to have moments of repeating things like habit, you know, so you become quite kind of like solidified, but then you know you must also have moments of like producing novelty, producing like new ideas, which break down this kind of habit. So you know, that's an interesting model for us to think about for the future. So you know, I think it's completely possible to actually hold simultaneously this contradiction of being an institution as well as being alternative. So for me, it's actually very possible to think about it in this way.
And the last question, and how do you see the relationship between the development of AIT and your personal development, I mean in terms of career?
Yeah, yeah.
And would you see in the future that would be still related, that two things?
Yeah, I mean, well, interesting thing about AIT is always that, you know, we always have this understanding that we can also operate as an independent agent. So for instance, I was asked to be a curator on the Singapore Biennale in 2006, and this was completely unrelated to my position at AIT. You know, Kay is sometimes asked to guest curate in something, or he works in the Art Fair Tokyo as well. So, you know, of course it's extra income, which is also nice and necessary, I must say. So, you know, it's interesting that we've somehow managed to keep a good balance, I think, between our commitment to AIT, and I think at least four of the staff are kind of more permanently based here, but we also all operate or teach outside of AIT. But I like to think that, you know, most of us, if we had to make a hierarchical list, I think AIT would be like at the base, sustaining everything, and then from that base we would be flying out temporarily to do some jobs outside. So I think, you know, in terms of like our personal careers and where that's going, I like to hope that, you know, AIT will remain actually as something very fundamental. And I think what we've created, what we've developed, is actually, you know, something really interesting and something worth kind of working on, you know. So I don't think that any of us think of AIT as just some kind of stepping stone to become a director in the museum. I mean, I don't have any particular desire to become a director of a museum, or, you know, even like to call myself a curator is kind of, often I find it very problematic. You know what I mean? Because I'm teaching, I'm doing so many other things. So yeah, hopefully that kind of method can continue.